Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2022.
Today, the world of finance. This class has a lot of terminology in it, and I will repeat these things over and over again. You'll find that one of the things about my teaching style is I will bring up a topic two or three times, layering it in, because I appreciate that it's not easy to get the concepts and the words down on the first pass at any given time. But in today's lecture, I might even be able to show you how to become millionaires, or probably not. But without further ado, let me get started on this. As I had said, we in finance are much more interested in markets than we are in accounting numbers. In fact, the problem we have, the major problem, is that accounting, by its nature, requires historical information. And historical information doesn't mean anything to us really at all, because history is not prologue in our world. What happens tomorrow is based upon our best estimate of what happens tomorrow is based upon where we are right now. This means that we are actually in finance looking at a specific kind of process that is well known in physics. In fact, some of the early investigators mentioned, one of them specifically mentioned, that this natural process, a process called Brownian motion, was probably how stock markets worked. And in fact, one of the most famous early researchers who created the original equations was none other than a man who later went on to create the theory of relativity. His name was Albert Einstein. He actually got his fame working in this area, although he didn't know that it was actually how stock markets and all that kind of stuff works. But anyway, I'm going to bring up terminology to you here. But before I do that, I need some sort of basics that maybe you've heard before, but I'm going to tighten those definitions up for you here. One of them is the term market. A market is any place where buyers and sellers come together. A market is any place where buyers and sellers come together. Now, a market could be a physical location. It could be a website. It could be a central place where mail comes in from people buying for people who are selling. A market doesn't have to be a physical platform. And in fact, many more markets now are becoming virtual platforms. Although, interestingly, that is actually kind of spotty. The entire world of e-commerce is not as glorious as you might think. In my own work, I have more sales that come through physical art exhibitions and shows than I do through my Amazon website. It's just the nature of some markets is more amenable, as it were, to e-commerce, and others, they want to see, feel, and touch, and all that kind of stuff. And so do appreciate that markets are actually in evolution, like they haven't been in a long time. But markets go back as far as time. Interestingly, in the Middle Ages, people talk about global commerce. Well, it's been around since the beginning of time. In the Middle Ages, there were these markets that were called fairs, F-A-I-R-E-S, where merchants from different countries would come together to buy and sell goods. And interestingly enough, with different currencies, they had to have a solution for how they would transact. And that was the beginning of banking, of multinational banking systems, banks that recognized the credit certificates of other banks in other countries. As a matter of fact, there was a song many years ago called Scarborough Fair, and that was, the Scarborough was one of them. There were fairs in France and Italy. I believe there was one in Croatia. And these would be markets, buyers and sellers coming together. And the sellers, of course, obviously produced goods or bought goods from their local place. And then the buyers were buying them to take them back and sell them at a profit in their own countries. So, I mean, this whole market thing has been around a long, long time. So what we're seeing now with e-commerce is just the latest technological iteration on the old style markets. Ooh, yeah, Jack. There are different kinds of markets. The one that most people are familiar with are goods and services markets. Are you going to the market? Sure I am. What are you going to buy? Things that are bad for my health. The goods and services markets. Now, there are obviously the white markets, there are the gray markets, and there are black markets. So the legitimacy of the market is not our concern too much. It's a market. And those are the ones with which you interact the most, although you do interact in other markets. Now, the next one is the securities markets, otherwise known as financial markets, stock markets, bond markets, commodity markets. And I should point out here, stocks, bonds, commodities, and these strange animals called derivatives. That I teach a course here in derivatives, and those are like options, futures, and caps, and forward contracts of various kinds, and swaps. I'll mention those a little later in the course because they are a very important part of the modern financial world. And you'll probably knowingly or unknowingly cross paths with these exotic animals down the line somewhere. But then there are also other kinds of markets too. There are commodities markets. Everything from oil to wheat to hog bellies to financial instruments themselves can be in commodities. Not really, but hell, there are even commodities that you've probably never even heard of that are traded 24 hours a day around the world. And these markets affect your lives, as I will show you in a while here. In just a few minutes, I'm going to bring up screens and show you what goes on in a stock market, in the stock markets, and in the commodity markets, and also in the financial markets as well. And I will begin that part of the course where you learn the terminology, you learn how to think about investments, and think about what they are implying about how the world is feeling right now, and all that. But in these securities, two dominant ones are bonds and stocks. Bonds and stocks. Bonds represent debt that a corporation owes. You are a corporation, and I am a massive pension fund. You need to borrow $50 million. So what you can do is you can sell me a bond, and the price I pay is $50 million. In other words, you have borrowed $50 million through that. Now, you might be some other investor, and later you might sell that bond to you. What happened here was a primary market transaction. What happens between me and you is a secondary market transaction. You will never probably in your life see primary market transactions. Well, I bought stock from Facebook when it went public. No, you didn't. You bought stock. You did not buy in the primary market. You did not buy stock from Facebook. Facebook sold all of its stock to a massive syndicate of investment banks. Then they sold it to suckers. So you would never be in a, probably never be in an IPO. Even though they'll let you feel like you are, you didn't buy the stock from the company. It was bought and then sold to you. Bonds and stocks represent ownership. You actually own a piece of the company. Probably a tiny, minuscule piece, but you own a piece of the company. Now here's the thing. Stockholders are how a stock is riskier than a bond overall. You see, a company must pay its bondholders what they are due in the current period before it can give a dime to the shareholders. We say that the bondholders have the prior claim. The bondholders have the prior claim, and the stockholders have the residual claim. The stockholders have the residual claim. Now, here's the thing. Let me try this. Madam, you bought stock in my company, and I haven't given a dividend out. That's what you give stockholders. I haven't given you a dividend. And the stock price has gone down. You know what you can do to me? You can cry. That's what you can do. You can cry. I want something. And you know what I can say? Kiss my ass. I'm sorry. But you see, if you're a bondholder and I don't pay you your interest payment that's due in the current period, you know what you can do to me? You can shoot my dog, sell my Bible on Craigslist, and make my parents wear furries. You can switch my company off with one filing. I am dead if I don't pay the bondholders. I don't care. I used to do the work as a consultant for companies, and I went to an annual shareholders meeting. The company had not paid a dividend since it started, and there at that annual shareholders meetings, oh, you should have heard those people. They were having a riot, and I was supposed to be the one who explained this all to them. There was this one lady, she said, I bought this stock 30 years ago, and you haven't paid me a damn dime on this. What are you doing? I need something to show me that you send out all these press releases, you've made a profit, and all this, and you're giving all this stuff about your new products, but we haven't seen a dime. And she just went on, and I have to be nice to her. I said, well, look, bitch, we're putting the money back into the company. We're plowing back in to grow the company to raise your stock price. Amazon's doing that. They don't pay any dividend. They're just taking every dime they make and pushing it back into the company to grow the company, and that means that the stock price will go up. So the shareholders can make money through the capital gain of the stock price going up and or through the dividend. Companies that push the money back into the company generally are taking a greater risk as far as the stockholders go. If you get a dividend, you know that's there, but with just pushing the money back into the company, you don't know whether it's going to create more value or not. But overall, stocks are riskier than bonds simply because the stocks, you're not guaranteed anything, and you can't do anything if you don't get anything. The bonds, you get your interest payments, your coupon, and then you get your money back at the end of the bond's life that you lent. That's how bonds work. Here's the funny thing. The bond markets are 10 times the size of the stock markets. 10 times. But all you ever hear about is the stock markets. You never hear about the bond markets. Stocks are volatile. They're up and down. They're all over the place. They're sexy. They're exciting. And the trading on the floor of an exchange is just wild. Buy, sell. Bond markets, there's nothing happening. They don't go wild. They just flow up and down because there's this anchor. You get your dividends. You get your money at the end that you lent. That's it. There's nothing exciting about that. Well, gee, that bond went up by one penny today. Ha ha, boy, oh, is that a thrill. No, these talking heads on the show, they talk all about bonds, about stocks. They never mention bonds. Hardly ever, because there's just nothing to say. And that's the way it is. And understand that really responsible investors, you know, like corporations, pension funds, they don't do stocks. They do bonds because they can't afford to lose the money. When you get people who are in their retirement years, you generally begin to flow their portfolios away from stock investments and toward bond investments because they're safer. They are fixed income instruments, as it were. So do know that when I talk all about stocks all the time, I am going to counter that with a chapter on bonds and show you just how boring those things are. This one's a little complicated, but the commodities market, like I said, it's got so many different things. Oil, natural gas, you've got the wheats of all different kinds, you've got oils of different kinds, you've got hog bellies, you've got contracts and trades on all kinds of different things. These are vast, insanely large markets. They impact you, but only indirectly. But the impact is hard. These commodity markets, the prices flow up and down, a lot of times by things beyond your beyond our control. Weather conditions can move these markets around. I mean, this mad war in Eastern Europe is really roiling the markets. And even things like virtue legislation, when California went into this whole thing about, you know, everything will be biodiesel, all engines will be biodiesel within 2 years. Well, they're going to enter the soybean markets, and they're going to wipe out the soybean supply that has been feeding the starving world of nearly a third of the world's population. They're going to take it for their green initiative for biodiesel. So that's going to drive the prices as they demand all of this soybean. They're going to drive the prices up, and that will drive some of the world into mass starvation, riots, overthrows of government, the whole nine yards. So these are really interesting markets, and there are courses I teach here where you could get involved in that kind of stuff, learn about that. And another one, I'm going to put it down here. It's kind of hard to characterize it. Some would say it's actually a commodities market or something like that. Currency markets, they are enormous. I mean, they are vast, the size of planets. Markets, currency markets are, and I have a course in international finance, FIL 341. I'll be teaching in the spring. If you want to walk on the wild side, it sounds boring. It's not, because that's where we really get to talk about things like wars and economics and policy differences among countries and interest rate environments and inflations and all of that kind of stuff. The math isn't all that hard, and it's really kind of more interesting than a lot of courses that I teach. Like, I teach a course in working capital management. You want to talk about boring? I'm afraid my students are going to come into class with razor blades and kill themselves during my lectures there. It is that boring. Some of these are exciting. They're very interesting, and some of them are just ho-hum, who cares? Like the bond market. I can't even think of a way to make that an exciting thing to talk about. Stock markets, yeah, those are fun because you can make a lot of money. But understand this. For everyone who makes a lot of money in the stock market, there are 10 people, 10,000 people, who get their clocks cleaned by it. All you ever hear about are the winners. They are the ones that are featured on the TV shows. They have their commercials. Hi, I made a fortune in the stock market with my system, and I can show you how to do it too for $19.95. And if you order before midnight, I will sell you also my stock charts so you can learn how to do it the way the professionals do. You never hear the 10,000 people get up there, hi, I got my ass kicked. I am so poor, I can't even afford the last two letters, so I'm P-O-P-O. And I'll sell you my system for becoming poor beyond your wildest dreams. You don't ever hear about them. It's like lottery. You hear about the winners. You don't hear about the tens of millions of people too poor to invest in lottery tickets who do so, and they don't have food, and they lose every week. See, that's how it works. You hear about the winners, but you never hear about the vast legion of losers in these markets. Walk carefully in these markets. This is my domain. And I can tell you right now that I am out there specifically for the purpose of taking away your lunch money. Because I win, you have to lose. And I prefer to win and eat well, and I don't care what happens to you and your starving children. That's the reality of it. Now that sounds harsh. Welcome to the world. It's a bad place. It's also a great place too. I mean, cheeseburgers are great. Okay, but I'm going to show you how this works. In a class like this, and in professional finance, we are not teaching you about day trading. I don't give a rat's ass if you're a genius on Robinhood. I really don't. Please don't brag to me about that. I've been on the floor of an exchange or two, and it doesn't impress me. Here's the thing is, here in finance, we are talking about long run. The market value is the value from moment to moment of a stock, let's say. The intrinsic value is the underlying hum of that stock. We play for the long haul. We play for the corporate funds that need a place to go to earn money for the investors, for the stockholders. We play for you to have a family and raise it and have the money to meet the dreams and goals of your vacation home, your retirement, your kids' college education. We are not playing for the short run. As a matter of fact, the short run is where you can get killed if you're not really good at what you do. It's like in the Army where we were taught in combat school, we were taught our job is to hold the line, to not freak. Our job is to make the enemy scared and scattered and run, and that's when we can mow them down. The long run is standing your ground. If the market's going down, what the hell? We do some adjustments to the portfolio, and then we roll forward, and we don't freak out. We let all the amateurs sell at the top, and then we've got them, and then they, you know, essentially they sell and sell and sell until we get them to the bottom, and they are poor. And we just hold on and keep going forward, upward. That's what we do in finance, is we're long haulers. And this is sort of that unfortunate process of going from being kids to being mature leaders as adults, not for the short run, but for the long run. But I do talk about the short run because the long run is built on a million short runs. So we do talk about it, and I'm going to show you here in a little while how markets work, how to read the screens, and even if you think you're already a genius investor, you probably aren't, and you'll get some terminology. I caution in this lecture that I go through a lot of terms. I've already given you some terms, prior claim, residual claim, different kinds of markets, what a market is. This is like a terminology lecture, and so be sure that you get this in your notes that you're writing down, because this is the stuff of quizzes and midterm exams, book stuff too, but I go into more depth. The reason you have a professor like me is because we've been out there and we can teach you more than any book could probably ever do it. And I'm so damn good at what I do, I can do it the best. Let's try that again. Yeah, pain's gone now. Okay, here we go. What was I going to say? All of these markets play together, and they're moved by forces that are beyond your control, obviously. And in many circumstances, they're beyond anyone's control. However, in the worst of conditions, I can teach you how to hedge so that the bad isn't the worst. The good might not be the best either, but I can show you how you can control the future. You can limit the risks that are involved in it, and I will teach you how to do that in this class. When I hear people talk about, well, I got my ass kicked in the stock market, I don't have a whole lot of sympathy because they could have kept that from happening if they had really known how to invest. They could have still had those stocks, and when those stocks went down, I can show them how they could have a countering investment that would go up so that there was not the amount of loss. Now, on the other hand, the amount that it goes up is limited by the floors, the securities floors that you created under it, but at the same time, it levels it out. We can do this, and we do this a lot. That's what insurance is all about. But in fact, many companies, let's take an example of farmers, for example. A farmer is in a commodities market. He or she grows corn, let's say. Now, in a year where corn prices are high, that farmer is going to make a lot of money off the corn crop. But if prices are low that year, the farmer is going to get killed and could even be in bankruptcy because the corn prices are so low per bushel. What we can do is show them how that when corn prices fall, they can make money off a derivative that bets against the corn, so that they lose money on the corn, but they make money on the derivative. At the same time, of course, if corn prices go up, they'll make money on the corn, but they'll lose some on the derivative. But what it does is it levels out their cash flow so that they lose that volatility, that uncertainty, through the use of financial instruments to counter the volatility of the commodities that they are creating. The same would be for a trucking company. They will have higher profits if diesel price, fuel prices are low, but they will have lower profit if diesel prices go up, okay? You see, the problem though is that a trucking company is not in the business of diesel prices. It's not. It's in the business of hauling stuff. Just like that corn farmer is not in the business of corn prices. That corn farmer is in the business of growing corn. So what we can do is we can take the specialized markets and play them the other way. So that, for example, in the diesel market, if diesel prices go through the roof, he or she will lose money on the cost, but they'll make money on the diesel contracts, the futures contracts. Similarly, if diesel prices fall, they'd make more profit, but they'd also lose on the contracts we created. But what it would do is it would take out from their financial income statement the volatility of that fuel cost component. It would no longer be there. It would stay pretty level from month to month and year to year. So when you hear people talking about how they've lost money in this market or that money, or their company's lost money because of this cost or that cost, a lot of times, if they had the right people who knew it, they could control those costs and turn volatility into just something that goes every day. It's just a normal part of the process. The same cost, or it's not, we can't perfectly level off a cost, but we can get rid of most of price volatility in a commodity through the use of financial instruments. So these markets are always interacting with each other. And in your lives, you're going to be corporate animals. Every one of you in here, unless you get really weird and decide to join a hippie commune, but you're going to be in the corporate world. You really, really want to care about what we're doing here, because at the end of the day, it's all going to boil down to money. You say to yourself, well, money isn't everything. You say you can't buy happiness with money. I was in the Army. I bought happiness with my money. So don't get all gooey about that. We're dealing with money and capital in these classes, because underneath that is the stability of a company and the stability of industries and the stability of nations. And if you don't like this, well, that's the problem, is that you can be like California was and you can think you're doing such a wonderful thing. You know, Mother Gaia is going to love us. We're green. We're so progressive. And at the same time, you didn't think about what you were going to do to a third of the world with your wonderful virtue. Think ahead, plan, do things the right way, and everyone comes out ahead. And if you don't do it the right way, well, there you go. Now, I should say I'm sorry for being harsh like this, but I'm not sorry. This is how the world works, and in our business, in your business majors, you have to be thinking in these terms. You can be a good person, and I hope that God you are, but at the same time, you have to be harsh, and you have to understand how the world works. So as we go forward here, understand that in my business, and I'm going to teach you about stocks and stock markets, bond markets, a little bit. There's a lot of terminology here today, but you understand that in a stock market, I am here I'm here to take your lunch money. When I'm trading, I want to take away your happiness because that will make me happy because I'll have your money and you won't. That's how it works. These markets are driven second to second by supply and demand dynamics for the securities, buy and sell orders. This is happening all over the world 24/7. It is happening, and the marginal investors, the powerhouses, they have computers all around them. They have phones on both arms, and they're talking on a speakerphone with another one. They have the fastest machine learning computers on Earth, access to data. The speed of their connections to the trading floors is lightning. And as I told you, now at least one house, probably several, can actually see into the future. They can see a price. 100 milliseconds is the time now into the future that with 80% accuracy. You think you're going to beat that with your genius and your little charts? You're wrong. You are just wrong. And I'm going to have a chance here later in the semester to have you meet by Zoom one of my former students who's a trader. And he'll tell you about one brokerage house and what they can do that is more than you will ever dream of doing. Even if they give you their platform. Yeah, you can trade on TD Ameritrade or Robinhood. Nah, they can still beat you. Yeah.
Isn't there an exchange that has basically a bunch of line coils to delay the supercomputers?
Yeah, we can beat them. We can beat them. I mean, the whole purpose here. Look, the best way to, let me try this. I'll ask you, what's the best way to predict the future? I'll tell you, I know it. You create it, okay? I can make you stuff that you'll feel very safe and secure with, but if it doesn't make me a dime, then I'm not gonna do it. That's how the world works. God, I hate being evil. Yeah, no, I don't. Okay. Now, here, I want you to understand the difference between an exchange and an index. It goes with this. This is in play. And then there's also the difference between an exchange versus an index. And I always ask this on the first quiz. Hint, hint. An exchange is a platform on which many securities are traded. So for example, the New York Stock Exchange, you've probably seen pictures of that floor, everyone yelling at everyone, buy, sell, buy, papers flying everywhere. That is an exchange. The American Stock Exchange, the AMEX, that's an exchange. Many stocks and bonds are traded back and forth, day and night, all over the world. Now, in other countries, sometimes in exchange, you'll hear the term bourse, B-O-U-R-S-E, and we use the term exchange, but you'll see some of those. Now, an index is a collection of stocks, a theoretical portfolio that sort of measures the pulse of a larger exchange or a larger market. It's not an exchange, it's just a collection, theoretical, of some stocks. You can tell an exchange because it'll have a number after the word. It's that many, the number is how many stocks are in this theoretical portfolio. So when I look up here, I look and I see the S&P 500, the Dow 30, and then I see the NASDAQ, and then I see the Russell 2000. Notice that only one of those has no number after it. That is an exchange. Now, the New York Stock Exchange is this big 800-pound behemoth that trades. It's a physical platform where the big stocks of the world trade day and night. Well, day. The opening bell, ding, 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 and everyone, and then the bell, closing bell, ding, 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 and everyone shuts up. Now, the NASDAQ, now there are others. The AMEX is another one. These are physical platforms. You can go there. I've been there. I've been on the floors. But there are also some that are virtual. The NASDAQ, the National Association, National Association of Securities Dealers Automated Quotations. That is a virtual exchange. It has been around forever. When I ran a brokerage, Penny Stockhouse, NASDAQ was there. We usually called it the NASDAQ, the NASDAQ OTC BBS, the NASDAQ over-the-counter. God, it's been so long ago. I can't remember right off the top of my head. But yeah, that one's now the Russell 2000, the S&P 500, the Dow 30. Let me take them in order. The Dow 30 is a theoretical portfolio of the 30 largest companies on Earth, or pretty much the largest public companies on Earth. It is a, and so as this goes up and down, that means that those 30 stocks on their in their composite average are going up or down. These are huge companies, the safest companies you could invest in as far as stock goes. So their volatility is going to be less. The S&P 500 is 500 mammoth companies of the earth. In the S&P 500, those 500 companies taken together, they constitute about 60 to 70% of the total value of ownership in the world. That much in those 500. So when we see the 500 moving up and down, that's a measure of a broad index of the large monsters of the earth. The NASDAQ is small cap, small, scrappy companies, highly risky, riskier, I should say, volatile AF, and of course you would then expect that that could make you the most in the NASDAQ stocks. Now, I caution, oddly enough, the NASDAQ, which was where I got companies listed, companies went public, and they were small, so obviously I would use the NASDAQ to get it to, and it was a process to get a trading symbol. It was worse than the SEC getting the company public. But the NASDAQ does have some huge companies on it. I mean, Microsoft is on there. Some companies, they started on the NASDAQ years ago, and they just didn't want to bother with the insane paperwork to get listed on the NYSE. So you'll see them sitting there all these years later, and here's the way you can tell where it is. If it has four letters in its symbol, it's probably a NASDAQ company. MSFT, AMZN, as well as all kinds of tiny companies, Uber, UBER. Those four letters, that tells me it's probably a NASDAQ. It trades on the NASDAQ. Now, companies with one letter, two letters, or three letters, those would be New York Stock Exchange, Amex, something like that. F for Ford. I'm drawing a blank. God. Come on. Pfizer. PFE, I think it is. PFC, something like that. Pfizer. Those are companies with one, two, or three letters. Those would be on the heavy exchanges. And they're all active, just insane. The amount of money that trades on a given day, probably in the, and these are all secondary markets. These are not companies selling their stock. This is buyers and sellers buying from and selling from and to each other. This is not IPOs. Well, I bought in Facebook. Ha ha, I bought the Facebook IPO. No, you didn't. You most certainly didn't. That entire issue was subscribed by a syndicate of investment banks who then sold it to you once they'd pumped the price up and suckered you in. You don't buy from the company. The company never sees a dime of your money. Some other investor does. If you buy from him or her, or you get the money from some other investor if he or she sells to you. But the secondary market, that's what we look at. We never look at primary markets. They don't mean, you would never be able to get into a primary market as an individual investor unless you are a hugely wealthy person. And I know darn well there's not one of you in this class who is a hugely wealthy investor. If you are, please come to me. I have some deals to talk to you about right away. Now, look at this. Okay, here. First of all, the price doesn't matter at all. What matters is the change in the percent. The price of a stock, whether it goes up by a certain price or down by a certain price, that means nothing to us. All that matters is percent change. Look, if you have an investment, you bought a stock for $10, it goes to $11, you have made 1 on 10, you've made a 10% increase. However, if you bought a stock for $100 and it went up a dollar, you've made 1 in 100, which is 1%. See the difference? The dollar value means nothing to you. All that matters to us is percentage changes. And also, here's where the real terminology. A market that is up or positive or optimistic is called a bull market. And you don't say bull market, you say bull market. A market that's down or pessimistic or falling, that's a bear market, a bear market. The bulls and bears are always fighting with each other. Now, you can be bullish overall, but bearish on a stock. You can be bearish on one industry, but bullish on another industry. You can be a bull one year and a bear the next year. Or you could have a lifetime as a bear or a lifetime as a bull. It's all dependent upon the specific investor and also the specific time period, industry, and company. So today, okay, now red is a bull market, green is a bear, red is a bear market, green is a bull market. So if we are working today, madam, was this a bull day or a bear day on the stock markets? What, you said bull. It's bull. Yeah, bull. Yeah, it's bull market. This is a bull market day. Yeah, it's had its ups and downs, but generally there was bullish sentiment. Now you look inside. Now notice that the Dow was up just 0.18%. Realistically, below 0.25 is kind of a meh day. Yeah, it was a bull day, but not anything that gets me too stirred. Notice that the Standard & Poor's 500 was up more, 0.29. More stocks, riskier stocks, tend to have more volatility from day to day. And notice the NASDAQ, well, spank me Jesus, it's up the most. The high risk, high volatility, scrappy stocks. Never mind the Russell 2000. You've got so many of these indexes. I mean, Wilshire's, Russell's, PIMCO's, 2,000 stocks of one kind, 2,500 of another kind, 12 of something else. I mean, there are so many different indexes. I always stick with the big dogs, the 30 and the 500, for most of the when I talk here. But however, notice that this was a bullish day. However, within that story is a story. The market is an animal. It doesn't think ahead. It's like a primitive, crude animal. There was good news that started the day. Well, actually, do you notice how there was a drop at the opening bell? Something spooked the market for just a minute. Little blip of information, but that was gone. The next information that came through seems to have been pretty bullish information. It was stronger the more volatile the companies were. So one way or the other, though, you notice the same pattern. Some information got the markets bullish toward the mid-morning, but then you saw the bears kind of take a hold. See how it dropped off? Oftentimes, you'll see that. Stocks, a bullish market will tend to pull up a lot of stocks. But so you'll buy in hard on everything you can, and then you'll see, well, that went up and it really shouldn't have, and you'll start to do what's called some profit taking off that. And that was what was going on there as the market began to sag and the bears took over. Then it kind of blipped and farted through the noontime, midday, and then the bulls kind of came back in. We feel like now that's not the information that did this. That information is gone. It's already been absorbed. Whatever is happening because of new information, not old information. So this is not an echo of this at all. That's not how markets work. See here at the end, did you see some profit taking there by the final bell? I mean, everything was up, and so there were traders that just took their money, excuse me, toward the end, and then wandered off into the night. It happens. And now, there's going to be activity after the bell, and there will be activity before the bell tomorrow morning. The aftermarket is called the post-market. You'll hear me call it post. And the before-market is called the pre-market, or you'll hear me use the term pre. There are buy and sell orders put in, post and pre. Oftentimes, I will do my trading pre-market. I will see what information is happening early in the morning, and then I will make a move. And then as soon as the bell rings, the trade will happen. So sometimes the closing price of a stock will be quite a bit different from the price opening the next day because of the balance of buy and sell orders that occurred in the post and pre. Now, going over here, a commodity market, crude. Crude oil is an enormous market, and this is actually only one crude. This is the light Brent sweet crude. Sweets are real lightweight, high grade. They don't require a lot of cracking to get them down to the products. And so here, this market went up as high, and if you know any of my students from last spring, I was telling them, the market wanted 125, and it finally got there. And the price of gas, of course, gasoline, went through the roof. Gasoline went through the roof. The distillates like diesel, kerosene, and jet fuel went through the roof because crude oil went up in price. Why did it go up in price? Well, gee, all that oil flowing out of Russia, flowing through Ukraine, and all of that got disrupted. I wonder why the price would go up. It wasn't anything to do with some stupid-ass conspiracy. Well, the controllers of the world made the price go up. It's their fault. Oh, bullshit. It was just simple supply and demand dynamics that pushed the price up. Once the cheaters figured out how to get around the oil sanctions and the Russian oil started to flow again, well, guess what? And the price of crude started to fall again. Now, it actually got down below 88. I think it got below 88 a barrel a few days ago, and it's back up. So you'll see the price of gasoline at the pump probably in the next few days bump back up a little bit. It won't be anything like it was before. But you can watch these markets and say, oh, the oil market, and say, oh, well, that means that the price of gasoline will go down. Or in this case, the price of gasoline is probably going to go up. So you might want to get a fill up today because you'll see the price of it go up. I'm figuring maybe $4.19 a gallon, maybe. I don't know. I used to be really good at that market. Look, one of the things is, if you're a commodities trader, you are a trader in that. You are not an expert in everything. And I know traders who maybe are experts in two or three. But I mean, man, once you dig in, the oil markets are just so insanely complex. Understanding shipping, understanding the difference in the types of containers, understanding oil, the trade routes, the refinery capacities, and all that. One thing that was a real problem, and this is an interesting side of it too, is that there had been a real push, to get away from fossil fuels and oil burning and combustion engines or oil products. And so a lot of the refineries had cut back their capacity. That means they didn't just close the door. They turned off things that take a while to turn back on. Well, when the COVID lockdown let go, all of us were a little surprised by how strongly the economy started to come back. People started driving, trucks started moving on the roads, lights came on. And so those refineries, they couldn't just say, okay, let's refine more oil, First, the oil had to get there, and then they had to get those refineries back up from 70% capacity back up to 90 or better capacity. So those are what happened, and those were the reasons the prices went up on gasoline, diesel, kerosene, jet fuel. Those were the reasons. It wasn't a conspiracy. There's nothing in the darkness that isn't there when the lights are on. And that's what you are going through, is the process of turning on the lights and seeing that the world isn't evil. It might be greedy, but there, I mean, I'm an old conspiracy theorist. Hell, I don't know if, did I tell you I actually run a ghost hunting club here at ISU? Yeah. Now, it hasn't done anything for 2 years. You can't hunt ghosts by Zoom. But, I mean, yeah, I love conspiracy theories, but these wackadoodle ding-dongs these days just embarrass the hell out of us. Okay, now, gold and silver are very different. They're both commodities markets, but they're very different. Silver is driven by supply and demand dynamics for industrial and cosmetic uses of the metal. So, so the prices bounce, boing, ding, bong, because of those markets. The need for it, the availability of it. Gold is also driven by a bunch of crazy mofos who are speculators, gold bugs. These people who have gold because they think the zombie apocalypse is coming. They are weird people, and you've got to be careful because they'll try to sucker you in to their club. And so the gold market is more volatile simply because of this extra player that reacts in a way that is kind of irrational. And I don't like to use that word with markets, but these guys are cray-cray crazy. And so do know that gold is going to, do you see how gold actually and silver moved in different directions today? Isn't that kind of weird? They're both commodities, they're both kind of the same, they're shiny, but gold is pulled around more by these speculators, and there are some large speculators in that market. Okay, now the currency markets, euro and all of those, yen, the GBP, Great Britain pound, and the Japanese, the yen and all that. Those are specialized currency markets, what I talked about down there. They are actually fascinating markets. You have to be crazy to be a speculator, but Lord knows there are speculators. They're half of the market. But like I said, if you want to get into that world, it's a world where you're actually learning and thinking about politics of different countries, world affairs, systems of government and when they change, forces that cause trouble in countries, international agitprop, what Russia has been doing for a number of years now that has stirred up so much trouble in other countries, what we do too. I mean, this is there's math involved, and you can't just have feelings about things. But once you get into it, it's almost addictive because you become a world citizen, and you have to pay attention. When I go to other countries to teach, I have to know about their countries and know about their currencies and know about their economic and policy systems, politics systems. It's actually kind of interesting. So if you're interested in that, I have FIL. I'm sorry, it's 347 next semester. You can enjoy that with me before they figure out that I have too much fun in the course and have someone else teach it. Now, these last two, the crypto markets, I'll get into those. Like I said, that's part of a much, much more important thing called blockchains. And I am going to spend at least a little bit of time teaching about blockchains before this semester is over because they are so taking over the world. But now, these last two, FTSE, that's 100. See, that's an index. And the Nikkei 225, that's an index. They have numbers after. Now, the FTSE is 100 big companies on the London Exchange. The Nikkei 225 is 225 big companies on the Tokyo Exchange. Now, when I say that the world is full of clockers, Nikkei was open when we were all in Bedibai. It's on the other side of the world. As the sun went down in Japan, it was rising in Eastern, then Western Europe. So those markets were waking up. It rose in London, and that market woke up and traded. The sun has gone down over there in London, and now then the United States woke up, and it ran. Now it's past the closing time on the U.S. market, and the sun is setting on the East Coast and across the United States, and it will be rising in Japan, and the whole process will start again. Every day, forever. It's just the way the clock runs. And if you are truly an international person, an international trader, an international analyst, the world is open for your inspection 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And every market has players who are greedy at every time of the day. So know that about our world. We don't go on a 9-to-5 punch clock or a salary. We're always online looking for something to do. But so help me God, if you send me an email in the middle of the night, I'll eat you. Someone sent me an email at like 1 o'clock in the morning. It wasn't one of you, I hope. God, what were you doing? Well, okay. Never mind. Okay, now, let's take you down to the level of the individual stock. These are broad markets. Oh, where was the hell? Oh, that irritates me. Sometimes they show another market here, which is really interesting. There are indexes that don't measure stocks or bonds or commodities exactly. There are indexes, and you can trade in these. As a matter of fact, see that S&P 500? There is no way any of you have enough money to buy 500, all 500 of the stocks, and replicate the S&P 500. However, there are ways that you can do it. There are these animals called ETFs. You buy a share of that ETF, what you have done is you have bought the S&P 500. So yeah, you can do it through these ETFs. You think you know the S&P 500? You buy the ETF and play it. The S&P 500 are called spiders. Now, there's one that's interesting, and sometimes they actually show it up there. It's called the VIX. VIX. It is an index of volatility sentiment. It moves up and down as the volatility of the markets ebbs and flows. And so the VIX is a way that you could bet on the volatility. Not any stock, not even a portfolio of stocks. You can just bet on the sensitivity of the market. So for example, this was up. I mean, I was showing this to my students in Central America, it got really high. The VIX went up a lot because there was a lot of volatility in the market. The VIX started surging. And by the time I was finished down there, that volatility had backed off a lot, and so the VIX was falling again. So if you want to speculate on just pure sheer volatility, riskiness, as it were, in a way, of the market, right now, I don't know. Let me see if I can get it real quick here. I'm kind of curious. I haven't looked at it in a few days. Yeah, VIX. Yeah. Notice that it's a short term. This is an ETF. You can bet the VIX as an ETF. And it costs you $9.52 a share. So you could throw, less than 100 bucks and buy 10 shares. You could buy, and if you bet that it was going up, there's also a way that you could bet if it's going down too. There are a couple of ways you could bet. If you think the volatility is going to soak out of the market, there are several ways that you can use the VIX for your bet. So it's not just up, bull good, bear bad. As a matter of fact, right now, just recently, I used $500 in a heavy bear position because I thought that the market was going to go down. In that time period, it did, and I turned $500 into about $4,000. You can make money whether the market is up or down. I mean, think about it this way. If a meteor hits the Earth, Yes, many, many people are going to be killed. But if you survive, you can go into a lot of abandoned apartments and find some really nice shoes, Nikes. Oh, I shouldn't do that. It's true, though. I mean, one man's sin is another man's virtue. And so these markets, it's not a horrible thing. If you position yourself right, it doesn't matter whether the angels or the demons are on earth. You can still make your trade and make some money. But you have to be clear-eyed. You can't let politics or your personal sentiments interfere with you. You just have to do the look at the information and don't listen to other people as much as you start to educate yourself. And that begins with a class like mine and with an old cynical bastard like me. Anyway, let me take a stock. Anyone got a stock you'd want to see? And if you say Tesla, I will eat you alive. Yeah. Why is Rivian, for God's sake? Okay. I know, because some hoe handle in that class asked for it too. Rivian, for God's sake. Okay. It's okay. Notice that Rivian was up. Oh, look here. We're in the post market. See the trading that's going on after the bell? So you actually are seeing that things are still happening. We don't sleep. Even when they tell us to go to sleep, we're kids. Go to bed. We still play. And there will be a pre tomorrow morning. And I wish you guys were here every day. I could show you. You'd see more of this hustle and flow if we could do this every day. But look, do you see how Rivian was bullish. It was following the market. By the way, is Rivian on the New York Stock Exchange? Madam, tell me, is Rivian listed on the New York Stock Exchange or on the NASDAQ? Look at its trading symbol. How many letters? R-I-V-N, that's four letters. So that would mean that which exchange is the trading? NASDAQ. You're being cautious. Just say, I told you, if you get it wrong, I'll just say, you dumbass. No. It's okay, though. No, see, that's the thing is, I just keep saying this because I know that people won't see it or they won't remember it until you just get it repetitively done. That's how it works. That's people. If you remember the first time you're told something, well, you're one of us. You're on the autism spectrum, and you don't want to be there because everyone gives you a swirly when you're young. If you're normal human beings, it's going to take you a few times. If you've got a photographic memory, you're Rain Man, and you're weird. Not like me. Okay, but notice. See how it was up? Well, that's just 35 cents. Hell, it was up 1.09% in one day. You try to get that for a whole year on a bank account. Do you see how the percentage is what is exciting here on this? Heck, you buy 100 shares of Rivian, and it shoots up about 32.56. You have made 1% for the day, just for a day on that stock. See, the percentage is all that matters to us, and this was a bullish day. Notice the pattern. Do you see how it's very similar to how the overall markets were behaving today? There was that bullish, some good news lifted all stocks up. And then the news kind of started to slack back off, and it fell. That's normal. You don't get excited for, 1 minute. You just have to kind of let the markets do what they do. You're not going to change that market. You're going to ride it. And if it tips you over, well, there's tomorrow. The one thing you don't want to do is ever take a bet so hard that you could lose everything. There's a principle, it started in game theory. It's used in mathematics, it's used in war, it's used in corporate planning. It's called the Minimax principle. The Minimax principle simply says that you always take your position based upon the maximum loss, and then your particular position is the one that would minimize that maximum loss. So in other words, at any given time, you assume the worst, And then you say, how can I make the worst not as bad as it could be? And that's all through gaming, game theory, war planning, corporate strategic planning. You don't ever be too much of an optimist. Well, we'll assume the best case scenario. No, you're always waiting for your ass to be kicked, because sooner or later it probably will be. Look at this. I want you to notice, and this is all just during the trading day. Notice that yesterday the market closed at 32.21. This morning it opened up at 32.47. That was the post and pre. There was buying pressure, overselling pressure in the post and pre. And so this morning when the bell rang, ding, 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 it popped a little bit. It popped from where it closed yesterday. It's kind of like, if you don't know about the post and pre, it looks like magic. No, that's that activity you're seeing there. It's kind of interesting. There's some serious bullish activity going on in Rivian right now. I wonder what's gotten them so happy. Okay, here we go. Bid and ask. See this price up here? It's not really all that important. The bid is what you will be able to sell your stock at. The ask is what you would buy it at. The bid-ask spread, you're thinking to yourself, well, that's kind of a ripoff. You mean they'll buy it for me at a price cheaper than they'll sell it right away for? Yes. Speaking as a former brokerage owner, I got to make my money some way. I mean, that's how we do it. It's through the bid-ask spread, for God's sake. I buy it at a cheaper price from you, then I'll sell it at a second later. That's how it works. Now, the bid-ask spread tightens up if there's a lot of trading, because I don't have to spread it so much to make my coin. But if the trading is light, that spread, God, I showed one last semester, I think it was last semester, that had a bid-ask spread of over a dollar, and the stock was only like about $70. And it was because there wasn't much trading volume in it. See, the more active a market is, the more competitive forces. See, if I was buying your stock at 356, but I know that you are willing to buy it. You want to beat me and get it. You might do 357. So that competition will tend to lift up those bids, and it will tend to suppress the asks to some extent. So as markets get more active during a day or a week, that bid-ask spread will ebb and flow up and down. Now, the day's range, Rivian swung about a dollar from 32.43 to 33.72. Look at the 52-week high and low. This stock has been as low as 19.25 and as high as 179.47. Good grief. Okay, now, just based upon your thoughts, is this stock closer to its low, 52-week low, or to its 52-week high right now? Low. Now, what does that mean? Not a whole lot, but you see, we have this term we call necklines. Now, see, that's 179. I know traders who would say, you know, we've seen that it could get as high as that. It's not theoretically impossible. It's not just never, we've never seen it. We have seen this stock that high. So they might be bullish at this level just because this stock has shown that it could do something more than that. There was one time, madam, when a car fell on top of me and you ran over in a freak and you, whoa, like that, and saved my life. I got a mess of oil. Gee, thanks for that. But then I can't expect you to ever do that again. We're all walking around. You're in the group with us. And hey, dude, lift that car up. Do what you did. You go, you can't do it. You see, so just because it's done something once doesn't mean that it can always do it. It'll never do it again. You know, I've seen some people who were absolute boxes of rocks, morons. They had a genius thought one day, or I thought it was. And, you know, they never had one again. I lived in a rooming house long ago. I said, I'm going to move out to a place called Normal, Illinois. There was this one stoner, burnout, like 45 years old. And someone said, I wonder how many people do they have there? And he said, 8,263. And we all looked at him and we said, that's amazing. And he said, you mean I got it right? Okay, anyway. Wow, this is a rough, you're a rough audience, for heaven's sakes. The hell with you. Look at this. Notice that the trading volume today, this is how much on average, how many shares on average traded every day over the last 52 weeks. Notice that the trading volume today was actually pretty light. It was a little more than half. Now, the other ones of these, we're going to be going through these every day, different companies, look at the markets as a whole. Let's start every day of this class. So by the time this is over, you will be investing geniuses, and you can take care of me in my old age. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.